This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We welcome you in to Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 158. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're live, as always, from downtown Las Vegas at the world's largest sports book, Circa Resort and Casino. Got a big 2 hours on deck today. Lots of college football, lots of NFL. I did want to say off the top, my dad wanted to make sure that he told you thank you for the play on the Yankees. Max Fried yesterday ended up going pretty well.
Is that being sarcastic? No. I was on the Astros.
Oh.
Did you see that, by the way? Did you see Framber Valdez throwing, yes, like a complete hissy fit and nailing his catcher? That was insane.
Yeah. So how does that happen, by the way? So, like, the catcher's trying to wave him off, like, don't do this.
Right.
He obviously lets the grand slam go and then just doinks him a couple pitches later.
Yes, dude. Like, that is – Valdez has been a guy where if you've talked to people, like, who really follow the team, or if you listen to people who cover it, there has been this, like, emphasis on – not even emphasis. That's the wrong term. Caffeine isn't kicked in yet. But, like, this kind of trending narrative of him just being a cantankerous presence in the locker room. If you remember last year, there was a point where I think it was his changeup or whatever it was, where his ball was getting lifted higher in the zone than usual because he kept trying to throw it as hard as he could. And the staff was telling him, just cut down the velocity and the ball's going to be lower in the zone and you won't get raked as much. But he was just like, no, I want to throw it harder. And so he just wouldn't listen. And then you get that last night where, like you said, catcher's setting up and he's like, hey, put it here. He just completely nails him. I don't know, dude. That's a terrible sign.
He said after the game that it wasn't intentional. Seemed pretty intentional. Did you see the catcher stand up?
Oh, yeah.
And his look. He's like, dude.
That, I don't think it was intentional that he hit him. I think it was intentional in that he was very frustrated and just wanted to, like, let one loose. But your father, you're welcome, I guess, because I led you down the right path.
Led you down the path. But we do have two games in action, by the way, right now as well. Nats up 5-0 in the top of the fourth against the Marlins, and tie game in Mets-Tigers to get us going here. We will have one game that kicks off while we're on the air a little bit later on. Rangers and Diamondbacks going head-to-head in about an hour and a half. But that said, lots more still to discuss here. Let's set the table like we always do here on Money Moves. Hit us with the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
Looking forward to our guest today. Coming up in 30 minutes, we're going to talk a little fantasy football, which of course translates so well to the prop market. Kendall Valenzuela of Fantasy Life. Then in hour two, Sean Green of the Sports Gambling Podcast. Get his thoughts, yes, on Thursday Night Football, which approaches tomorrow. But I know he's got plenty of plays on college football, NFL Week 1, all of that. We can get into it all with Sean.
And maybe he's nervous, Landon Dickerson. He returned to practice yesterday, so I don't think there's going to be an issue there. But market's all hot and heavy for this team, and maybe there's a chance that our Cowboys can pull the upset.
Do you see that thing peak at 9? Obviously, we got the buyback now, but I was surprised that it got out that far so early in the week.
Yeah, so we talked about teasers yesterday because I saw a couple of offshore shops. I didn't see anybody nationally here do it, but I would assume that was some sort of like, all right, we're getting loaded up here on these teasers. Let's just push this up to 9 because it's not like the most key number you're going to come in and jump on. But like you said, it disappeared, so there was something there.
Excited for a college football segment that we're going to test out for the first time today. West Coast bias. Because listen, we know all you East Coasters out there. You talk your talk. You don't want to stay up and watch the games late at night. You don't want to see Jaren Sangapulatele come out here and have the best passer rating of anybody in college football from week one. You don't want to watch the Utes go to town on UCLA. That's fine. We'll watch those games. We'll take advantage of those numbers, and I'm excited to look at some of the games coming up this week.
I'm officially requesting that this is a weekly thing. I think it's great. You and I both have a lot of ties out to the West Coast, and I have a very strong disdain for the East Coast. I don't think you share that sentiment I refuse to buy vitamin water now because it's being branded as a New York product. But I am very excited for this because there's some good ones, including, I was telling you, we were bonding. We were kind of nerding out over all these other games for college football. Dude, that kickoff at 9 p.m. Pacific time between Sam Houston and Hawaii is going to hit so hard.
Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. And as we alluded to with the Thursday Night Football talk, we're about 24 hours away now from week one officially getting underway in the NFL. Yes, we've got action tomorrow, but then Friday as well with Chargers and Chiefs. Saw that peak for a bit, by the way. Chiefs -3.5. Those were snapped up. Threes across the board. But lots of NFL news and notes to get into today. And we're going to kick off with A little Jets Steelers update here. Diana Russini earlier this morning first to report that the Jets starting right guard Elijah Vera Tucker, a guy that New York believes can be like an all-pro, Pro Bowl type guy this year, suffered a serious injury, could miss significant time. Adam Schefter followed it up. Specifically, it appears it's a torn tricep. He is expected to get a second opinion. It may require surgery. And unfortunately, JVT, this is kind of tale as old as time for Elijah Vera Tucker. He's always dealing with some sort of injury. Remember 2022, he had another bicep injury that knocked him out for that season. So it's the different arm here, but not a great start for a Jets offensive line they were hoping could be a strength.
Yeah, in 4 years, he's played just over 2,600 snaps in the regular season. So it's a very small number. Has only surpassed 1,000 snaps one time in his career up to this point. And it sucks because you look from a pass blocking standpoint, if you break down some of the numbers, he's been pretty middling, but he's been a very good run blocker throughout his time when he has been healthy. So this is pretty big, obviously, for the Jets. I would venture a guess the fact that you're breaking in a new offense coming from the scheme of the Detroit Lions tree, the Ben Johnson tree, that offensive line for every team is going to be something you really rely on. But for a team that really wants to establish that run, run it, and run everything out of play action, set up guys like Justin Fields to not have to do too much, that's going to be a pretty big blow for this team. And it's also interesting because, as we had talked in the last few days, we had slowly seen the market head in the direction of, all right, let's start grabbing some of these threes with the Jets. Those are still gone, and it's still 2.5, but you do wonder if this is going to be enough to push this back to 3 with some just straight across the board, because it's 3 here, but it's shaded to the dog side at minus 120.
Yeah, 3 here at Circa, as you mentioned, still 3 at DraftKings, BetMGM, but you see FanDuel, Caesars, Superbook, and South Point here in Vegas all at that 2.5 right now. Steelers team that has a projected top 10 defense, by the way. They get T.J. Watt re-signed. We got the word from Mike Tomlin yesterday. He does expect Cam Hayward to play. So a few other layers there on Pittsburgh's side. But for Vera Tucker, again, just somebody who I was reading a lot of reports, had a phenomenal camp. And for an offense, when you have a quarterback like Justin Fields, who is, I think, fair to say it, average to subpar thrower of the football, you're going to want to have an effective run game with Breece Hall, with Braylon Allen, see what he can do. And so I would just say a big blow early for that unit that if they want to have success offensively is going to need to be pretty reliant on the ground.
Yep. So Xavier Newman sounds like he's going to step in, and we'll see if this actually does matter for him. If you look at last year, very limited sample size. We don't really know what to do with it. So we'll see if the former Baylor guard can actually do something at the position and supplement what should have been a pretty good run blocker for the Jets at that spot.
I am excited for that game, though, in general. See what Aaron Rodgers looks like in the offense for the first time.
I mean, the challenging part about week one is that almost all of these spreads are within, you know, a field goal. They're all coin flips. But these all seem like very good and intriguing contests throughout. Every single one of these should be relatively tight. That's generally what the NFL is. They call it the witching hour for a reason. By the way, did you see that news? It was official. I'm sorry. John Hansen,
yeah.
Officially announced on the McAfee show. Commercials. Full-fledged commercials for the Red Zone this year.
No.
Yep.
Really?
ESPN's fingerprints already all over
it. I knew that was anticipated, but I didn't think ESPN would actually do it.
It's the first thing I told Kelly when I came in here the day after that was announced. I told him, I was like, look, you know what's going to happen. It's going to be commercials. Like, that's the first thing that's going to happen. And sure enough, there we are. Oh, yeah. It's official.
Hey, by the way, John Hansen is our guy. Scott Hansen, Red Zone.
Scott Hansen, excuse me. Yeah. I apologize. A lot of Hansons out there.
I'm going to have to do more reading about this. That's very disappointing.
Who's the Catch a Predator guy? Isn't he a Hanson as well? No? Okay. I just wanted to.
I don't know.
But anyway, commercials.
Chris Hansen.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah, okay. Former Steeler, by the way, while we're on Steelers talk. Turn Charger, Najee Harris. He spoke for the first time this week since the 4th of July fireworks accident. Still wearing sunglasses, by the way. Media has not seen him out of sunglasses or a helmet and visor for this superficial injury. So just want to point that out.
It has to be pretty serious, right?
I would imagine so. Otherwise, and he's like, I don't care what anybody thinks because he's wearing the sunglasses. But I feel like if you're still covering this,
yeah. What are we talking about here? We're at nearly two. We're almost exactly 2 months away from the 4th of July.
Well, he's activated obviously last week from the non-football injury list anymore. Ramping up for Friday night against the Chiefs. Obviously, they have Omarion Hampton who's going to be leading the way. I hope at least as somebody who liked his rookie of the year odds. You see how much those have been cut down, by the way?
No.
He's been, I think he's like 10 to 1.
I mean, it makes sense. You look at the offense and what Harbaugh likes to do, and if he's going to be the lead back, given the status of that position on the roster, I think it makes a ton of sense that he's at least going to have the volume and the opportunity to be able to take this award. If any of these rookie quarterbacks show out, then it's going to be kind of tough to actually show that that's going to, you know, steal that award from one of them, as it is with any of these awards for the quarterback position. But I think it makes a ton of sense he would be up as high as he is.
So, yeah, he's a plus 850 on this latest odds board from DraftKings. Ashton Jeanty, your favorite, plus 275, followed by the rookie number one overall pick, Cam Ward, plus 350 for Tennessee. And then there's Hampton right there.
That's a strong number for Jeanty.
This was like 18 to 1, 16 to 1 when we talked about it in the summer.
See, now you can go out and tweet and celebrate your closing line value ticket. Yeah,
because that always works. It always pays off. I swear it's every time that you actually get closing line value on something that
I can show you.
You inevitably will never win it.
I can show you some sweet tickets. I can show you some really sweet tickets.
Yeah. Woulda, shoulda, coulda, baby. Right.
I still go back to the year that Carson Wentz and the Colts were red hot, and Humans and I had like 45 to 1 to win the AFC, and they were going into the Jacksonville game at the end of the year. All they had to do was win. They were going to be hot. I think they were down to like 6 to 1 to win the AFC. I think I might be being a little hyperbolic there, but they were really sweet tickets. I don't know if you know this, but they lost that game to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they didn't make the playoffs, and we didn't do anything with those.
Speaking of Jacksonville, Travis Hunter sitting there fourth on the odds board for offensive rookie of the year, 10-1, and their
3.5 across the board too, by the way.
Oh, and 3 for Chiefs Chargers, by the way. That was ticked up to 3.5 there for a minute, but those got snapped back up. Do you think we'll get back on the other side of 3, or is this the number we'll have by Friday?
Chiefs and Chargers?
Yeah.
I think it'll be 2.5, but it'll be like a juice 2.5. Like, you'll see that thing that you usually see for these standalone games, which it'll be like 2.5 minus 120 at one shop, and then it'll be like 3 minus 120 the dog's head at the other. So I don't think I'm going to get my 2.5 minus 110, but crazier things have happened.
Total in that one, 46.5. One big talking point about that game that I keep seeing making the rounds on social media: Jim Harbaugh, 5-0 all time as an NFL head coach in season openers. They're plus 142 money line dogs in that spot. We've got some conflicting trends, though, for that coming up next. Meaningful or meaningless, as we break down some trends and nuggets for week one of the NFL.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Stormy Bonantoni, JVT, no one named Hansen on the desk. That did take us a minute last segment. We got through it eventually. We figured it all out.
Yes, very true. We have our own John Hansen. Then, I'm sorry, who's Red Zone Hansen?
Scott Hansen.
Scott Hansen. And then there's Chris Hansen, who hosts
Dateline.
The hit program. I know him for To Catch a Predator and Dateline. That's what the other thing was. There's also the other John Hansen, who is the former president of the Continental Congress, as we just covered.
The more you know. Now, is this information meaningful or meaningless? God knows. But we're going to try to attack that same concept with a handful of games that are coming up here in the NFL for week one. And we're going to start with this Thursday night football contest, as we've compiled some different trends, things that we've seen historically. And how about this one? A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith, JVT, each have had a receiving touchdown in 3 straight home games against the Cowboys. Smith's 6 receiving touchdowns against Dallas are twice as many as he's had against any other opponent in his career. Do you think that's meaningful or meaningless? Should we be targeting some anytime teddies?
I mean, I think our guy, just to invoke him one more time, I think our guy Hansen was talking about Smith as in his receiving yards as one of the plays at the end of his program today. So I think there is something to it, especially if you're talking about a secondary that is either a little bit thinner. We know that Diggs probably is going to play, but maybe it's not going to be at full health. And of these, look, I don't know if you're going to pick your poison as to who you're really going to double up, but Smith's a pretty electric guy who can break a lot of plays. So I would say, sure, I think there might be something to that, especially against a potentially weak secondary.
Devonta Smith, plus 185 anytime touchdown, 10-1 first touchdown scorer, 14-1 if you think he can have 2 or must more in the game. A.J. Brown, plus 160 for an anytime touchdown there. Now, I mentioned before the break, as we were talking about Chiefs Chargers coming up on Friday from Brazil, that this Jim Harbaugh stat, rather, has gone around 5-0 as a head coach in the NFL in season openers. But how about this with the Chiefs? 19-4 in series with the Chargers since 2014. They've also won 11 straight road or neutral site games against the Chargers. Meaningful or meaningless that KC has had the advantage for so long now?
I mean, I would think there's something to it, right? Because there is some personnel. You're taking on the same team. Personnel largely does remain the same when you're talking about pro teams. It's not like these college squads that'll revamp entire rosters at once. And so if you have the success, albeit this is now a new coaching regime in his second year in John Harbaugh, assuming Jim Harbaugh did that too.
Yeah, we both John's
the better name. I do think that there is at least something to it. Now, does that factor in for me here this week? As I have espoused that I do like the Chiefs here in this spot from a number standpoint against Chargers? No, but I do think there is something to divisional success. I mean, look at the Broncos-Raiders dynamic. There's been a lopsided run there. There's a lot of different runs there. Jacksonville, the Colts going to Jacksonville has been a nightmare for them in the AFC South. So I tend to buy divisional trends a little bit more. I don't think I'm going to blindly follow them, but I think there is something to them.
Let's go back to that Steelers-Jets game as well. We mentioned the three-point spread, but 2.5, a handful of books as well, total 38.5. Since 2021, Aaron Rodgers' total QBR of 20.2 in week ones is the lowest among 22 quarterbacks with at least three opening starts in that span, has just one touchdown to four interceptions in those games, especially for a guy who's not very turnover prone, meaningful or meaningless on A-Rod.
Okay, so I'm going to say meaningless because I would assume that one of these is the game in which he played one snap or whatever amount against the...
I mean, yeah, but the data from that game, obviously, there's nothing to take from
it. All, but I mean,
but
it's
yes,
just
it's count, one of the years.
So we can eliminate one of those games, and then we're talking about a grand total of how many games? Three?
Yes.
So I'm going to go meaningless.
All right. I'm just saying. Openers have been tough.
Yes.
Let's go to your beloved Colts. Winless in 11 straight season openers.
This
second
is such a
longest
wild
streak in the Super Bowl era. Also, if we're looking at ATS numbers, 2-12-1 against the spread in week one over the last 15 years, the worst in the NFL over that span. Meaningful or meaningless as your Colts take on the Miami Dolphins in the opener?
I mean, I would like to say meaningless because there's, what is it, somewhere 11 straight right now, right?
Yep.
So you're talking about 11 straight games, probably against all different teams, or if there is some overlap, maybe one or two of the same teams. So it's just 11 random data points that have fallen in one direction. I kind of want to say it doesn't really mean that much. But it keeps happening. I was gonna say it keeps happening. So what am I supposed to do? Like, forget it. Doesn't really mean that much. I'm gonna say, for the sake of probability, it's meaningless. I don't think that it means anything. And in fact, we'll watch them snap it coming up on Sunday.
I kind of do like them in that spot. And I know we've talked about this game a handful of times. Colts right now laying 1.5, total 47.5 hosting Miami. But the more you read too about like Tua and Tyreek's relationship being strained and what's going to happen, like it just seems a little bit of a cluster there. Let's go to the Saints, a team you know I love so much. New Orleans, 0-7 last year, as we know, games Derek Carr did not start. Spencer Rattler, 0-6, four passing touchdowns, five picks in that time. The Saints are getting 6.5 points hosting the Arizona Cardinals in week one, total 43.5. But meaningful or meaningless, the way Spencer Rattler struggled when given the opportunity last year?
Well, I think it's meaningful. He didn't play well, so I think that there's something to it, especially the last three starts that he got last year. They were really poor. Didn't actually crack 50 when you're talking about PFF grading standpoint. Did put the ball in danger quite a bit. His last three starts I'm referencing here had a grand total of 8 turnover-worthy plays, so he could have actually gotten up worse. He only threw 3 interceptions over that span. Probably could have been more if he actually was on the right side of these things or if the other teams were. So I'm going to say it means something. Now, tying it into the Cardinals, you know that they're fast starters. You've invoked that a couple of times. Maybe it all comes together and we have made the right choice for survival.
Cardinals, fun fact, 5-1 against the spread in week one since 2019, best in the NFL in that time. By the way, a lot of these nuggets that we're giving you right now are in our NFL betting guide, which is available now. Betting guide 2.0 updated from the preseason with different things, proven betting systems, contest strategies, new host bets that came in after the original guide. You want access to this as well as the college football betting guide. VSiN.com/subscribe, as little as $9.99 your first 30 days. You can also see which subscription works best for you. We got an annual plan going on. But let's go to the Broncos, who are a team people are very high on in this week one matchup against the Titans, specifically from a survivor standpoint. But how about against the spread? They were perfect 8-0 in the favorites role last year, JVT, covering by an average of more 2 touchdowns, 14 points per game, tied for the second best ATS record in the NFL last year overall. Meaningful or meaningless as they open up the season as a big favorite?
I think it is meaningful in the sense, as we have discussed a couple of times when we talked about Denver in the big picture, front runner is a very negative term, but I will use it for lack of a better one. They're front runners. They are teams that they're a team that really does beat the crap out of the bad teams. And they played a lot of bad teams last year. Mm-hmm. It speaks to why I'm somewhat hesitant to really come in and back them full-throatedly this year, because I do think there is some fugaziness with the way that they played a season ago. And if you looked at some of the other matchups against some of the better competition, there were a little bit more lopsided in the other direction. But having said that, I think you get credit for taking care of business when you should. Sean Payton's a good enough coach that he doesn't or shouldn't lose games that he should not, and this would be one of those. So given the situation as well, rookie quarterback on the road, thin air, all those sort of things we've discussed already, I feel like there is some meaningfulness to this.
And as you mentioned a couple weeks ago, maybe it was last week, if you are looking at this game and you like Denver, if you like that stat as well that you just heard, covering by an average of 14 points per game in this spot as a favorite, maybe look at some of the alts on Denver if you are truly that invested in that thought process. And just to double down, another fun number, I don't know if you need to hit meaningful or meaningless on this, but quarterbacks drafted first overall in the common draft era, 4-15-1 in their season openers as a rookie. Now, Caleb Williams, of course, did get his in 2024, but prior to that, David Carr was the last one in 2002.
Yeah.
So, just a little nugget.
I think when you're talking about that, it's a really good point to look at when you're talking about the alternate lines and laying those. For Denver especially, why lay 8? Get it up to like 9.5.
Get a little more bang for your buck.
Not bang for your buck, and the fact that you're just kind of putting that a somewhat more key number up to 10 as opposed to 8, you might as well just go up to that, go up to 13.5. If they're going to cover 8, there's a strong probability that they're going to be able to cover 9.5 or maybe even 13.5.
Our producer Brian Ortega mad I put this one in the rundown, but listen, it had to be done. Packers 1-5 against the NFC North last season. Meaningful. Or meaningless?
They're trash. I'll say it again. I will declare that I don't know if I buy it when it comes to Jordan Love. I think that there was a really good stretch in his career 2 years ago after Toyotathon, and after that, there wasn't really anything to build on. He increased the turnover-worthy play rate last year. I think there's something to that for a guy that had that problem in college, and we'll see what happens. They have built their team to play from in front. You talk about front runners. Mm-hmm. That's a team. They need to be able to run the ball, control the time of possession, and they haven't shown the ability to play themselves back when they are behind. And okay. I think that's a problem.
Should we be targeting the overs in Panthers games again this year? 13-4 to the over last year, tied for the highest rate in the NFL.
I don't know. A couple of weeks ago, I was out at a local watering hole until the wee hours of the morning, and there was a ardent Panther fan that was telling me over and over again how much better this defense was going to be. So I'm going to say no.
Do I happen to be married to that ardent Panthers fan? Total.
You don't understand. When somebody ever tells you that, you know that you're in.
You know what's coming. Yeah. The total in that week one game, by the way, against the Jags, 46.5, and we mentioned it already, 3.5. That number now, if you do have interest in the dog, we're over that key number of 3 with the Carolina Panthers. Okay, we're going to step aside. I'm glad we brought up Cam Ward, though, in that week one game against the Broncos. I'm very curious about Cam Ward from a fantasy perspective. Kendall Valenzuela of Fantasy Life is going to join us. We'll talk through why week one on the waiver wire is so important and some specific players who could be worth a look when it comes to week one. We'll be back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Y'all, we're here just over 24 hours from week one officially getting underway in the National Football League. He's Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni with you back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 158. And let's continue our NFL talk with Kendall Valenzuela, who joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line, senior analyst at Fantasy Life. And obviously, there's so much crossover between fantasy and prop betting. We're going to get into it all. She's got an article up right now talking about why week one is so important for the waiver wire. But I wanted to ask you, Kendall, because I had a draft last night and I couldn't help but notice Cam Ward not getting picked, and he's the number one overall pick. I know you might not want to start him week one against the Denver Broncos defense for sure, but as far as a backup quarterback goes, I'm surprised there hasn't been more interest in him. Have we had a number one overall pick at quarterback that has been talked about less than Cam Ward? Yeah, I agree with you. I said this to my co-host, Adam Ronis, maybe months ago. I said, should we be talking about Cam Ward a little bit more here? And the truth is, probably at the beginning of the season, the answer is probably no. Like, when you watch his film from college, right, he's cool, he's fearless when he's got the ball in his hands, sometimes almost to a fault a little bit. And what we know about Cam Ward is that he does not necessarily have the best offensive environment around him. I love drafting Calvin Ridley. I have a ton of Calvin Ridley shares this season. I love Alec Iomanner, a rookie that if you want to go and get off the waiver wire, you can stash him. Tyler Lockett, my guy from the Seahawks, also good. But the overall environment isn't amazing. And I think there's going to be a lot of bumps along the way for Cam Ward. But I do agree with you, though, that in a lot of these drafts, he's probably going to go undrafted. And he is definitely someone that when we start with these bye weeks, when we start looking at guys to pick up off waivers, he's going to be one that, again, you're going to have high highs and you're going to have low lows. But he is definitely someone to keep an eye on. I understand why he's going undrafted, but definitely a guy that you want to keep an eye on once those bye weeks start coming up. And I'm hoping he's better than others expect.
All right, Kendall, let's talk about some of these other waiver wire targets. I wanted to start with Carolina and the ripple effects of Adam Thielen shipped off to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. They re-signed Hunter Renfrow. What do we do with the wide receiver core for Carolina?
Yeah, well, it was for Carolina, it was going to be, I picked up Jalen Coker. That obviously didn't work out because now he is on IR for them. So I think for the Carolina Panthers especially, I have a ton of Teterow, McMillan. But when we're looking at this team, I also went out and made sure to get a little bit more Xavier Leggett. He is one now that I thought Coker was going to jump him on the depth chart. And it just, you know, unfortunate injuries happen. I think it's a quad with Coker. So that's why he's going to be out for as long as he is. But I'm going Leggett. If you're in a really deep league, I think Renfrow's been drafted when I'm in the 20 round drafts at the very end. But he's also someone I think that you can pick up off the waiver wire as well. If you're drafting today or this weekend, you know, you can keep an eye on him. But I think Leggett is one that I'm definitely holding on to just in case. And then if you've got Teterow McMillan, you don't have to worry about it.
The Miami Dolphins got some good news on Devon Achane that he's going to be back after suffering that calf injury. And I see on your waiver wire article here, Ollie Gordon rostered, yes, in 24% of leagues. But we see Mike McDaniel on the podium today saying Ollie Gordon, he'll have zero plays or all the plays, 0 yards or all the yards or somewhere in between. Well, thanks for that, Mike McDaniel.
Perfect.
But is he someone, though, that you think should be targeting as that backup behind Achane?
Yeah, 100%. If Ollie Gordon, for whatever reason, is still on your waivers, go and get him. I wouldn't spend all of your fab, like some people have asked about Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, Bill. They've said, I've spent $100 of my $100 fab. I'm not recommending that. But a couple months ago, I thought, and a lot of people thought, that it would be Jalen Wright's backfield as the RB2 role. That if anything were to happen to Devon Achane, that Jalen Wright would step into that role and have a really big workload. Well, he doesn't have a good camp. He doesn't have a good preseason. Then all of a sudden, he has an undisclosed lower leg injury that he had surgery on not too long ago. And McDaniel also said he'll be back September-ish. We don't want any of that in fantasy football. We don't want September-ish. We don't want October-ish. We don't know what that means. And a lot of these coaches aren't really transparent with some of these injuries. So if for whatever reason, Ollie Gordon is still out there, make sure you go and get him. Spend a good amount of your fab because he really will step into a big workload if Achane goes down. Achane's already dealing with the calf injury. We don't want injuries at the start of the season or any time during the season. But if you're an Ollie Gordon manager, you know that you're going to get some really good upside if Achane were to go down. So, and if you're drafting tonight or just over the weekend, target him. He's definitely gone up draft boards. I was getting him in, you know, 11th, 15th rounds, but you can definitely still target him in drafts as well.
Do we have any clarity on how the Texans running back situation is going to clear up here at all?
No, a mess. Yeah. That's what it's going to be. I've stayed far away. I wish, and here's the thing, I hope I'm wrong. Like, I have no Nick Chubb. I wanted nothing to do with Nick Chubb. I wanted nothing to do with Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is still, you know, he's going to be out a minimum of 4 games. There's been rumors that Joe Mixon might not play football this season because of injuries and everything else going on. I'm unsure what that looks like, but we know we don't get Joe Mixon to start the season. Nick Chubb, for what it's worth, you know, I say I hope I'm wrong because that means we get the Nick Chubb of old. But realistically, we're probably going to get an older, aging running back that's coming off major injuries. And that's just not something you want. So I have told people, Damian Pierce, keep an eye on him. Woody Marks is a pass-catching running back that could maybe get in the mix here. So those
those are probably the two guys. If you did want a little piece of this backfield, because at some point someone's going to have to run the ball for that team besides Nick Chubb. So those are the two guys to go and get. And I have a little bit more Damian Pierce now than Woody Marks.
Kendall Valenzuela, senior analyst at Fantasy Life, got an article up at fantasylife.com right now discussing why week one on the waiver wire is so important. But with us having games this week, Kendall, there are a lot of people hoping that their teams do well or targeting some props out there that they might want to get in on. Who are some players that you really think could have a breakout week one and get some points for some people?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say, you know, I'm looking at David Njoku. He is someone, when we're looking at it from a fantasy perspective, we know how bad the Bengals have been in the start of games under Zach Taylor. I think you guys know the stat better than me, but I think they're like 1-11 over the last couple of years with Zach Taylor in the first 2 weeks of the season. It's really bad. So you're targeting anyone on the opposite side. So David Njoku is someone that he faced the Bengals obviously twice last season, had 24 targets in two games. Joe Flacco is there, yes. They had a really good connection, though, a couple of seasons ago. So I'm targeting and thinking that David Njoku could potentially just, like, shred the Bengals up. Maybe they change because they decided to, play in the preseason, and that could be all good and well. But I think David Njoku is a good guy to go out and get. And then I'm starting Drake May. Drake May is inside my top 15 quarterbacks this week, and people might be scared about that. People might have him as their second quarterback as well. But for me, he's my, QB1 in some of my leagues. So I think Drake May going up against this Las Vegas team, ranked 25th in scoring defense last season, he's someone that could also have a pretty good start to his season.
I know you broke down the Ollie Gordon situation for Miami, but I wanted to talk about that game really quickly in that those are two secondaries that are really shredded with injuries. Are there any pass catchers we're targeting for either one of those teams going up against Miami or Indianapolis or anything like that that you're looking at?
Yeah, so I'm going to be playing Jalen Waddle this weekend. I don't have a ton of Tyreek Hill. The vibes in Miami have just been really weird. So I don't know what's going on there. He wasn't named a captain. I don't necessarily look into narratives like that, but it's just been a little bit odd. So he's definitely one that if you have him, you probably got him in the third round of your drafts. You're starting him. You don't have better receiver options. When I look at the Colts, though, there is one guy, and this is a deep league. Like, this could be a really deep start if you need maybe someone in the flex, but I've really liked Josh Downs. I've liked him over the offseason. He's got a little bit of injuries, so make sure you keep an eye on that. We know Daniel Jones is in as quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts. He's got a better completion percentage than Anthony Richardson had his couple, the first start of his career. So Josh Downs, let me just tell you this. He averaged 7.1 receptions, 66.4 yards per game last season with Joe Flacco. So I like to think to myself, Josh Downs is someone that could be a sleeper pick, someone that I'm looking at to just say, hey, if I have a really deep starting team and I need someone in the flex, he could be someone that does start off strong, especially this week.
Okay, real quickly before we let you go, I had the number 4 overall pick in my draft yesterday and took Saquon. Okay. Was I wrong to do so? Or if not, I'm just curious, like, who do you think was the biggest, like, you should not have taken them in the first round?
I don't think you're wrong at all. I understand people's concerns with the workload that he had last season. He went deep into February. They won. We all know they won the Super Bowl. But I don't think you were wrong in that. I think I've taken a lot more Bijan Robinson than him. I've taken a lot more Jahmyr Gibbs. I haven't taken any CMC. I haven't taken Christian McCaffrey this season. And I didn't think that it was going to go that way because that could completely burn me by the end of the season. He could stay fully healthy and be the overall RB1 again. And I don't think anyone would be necessarily shocked, but I don't think that was a bad pick. People say that Saquon's a bad pick this year. I don't think he is. I'm sticking with Christian McCaffrey. I think that's the one that I've avoided definitely in the first round this year.
If it was a bad pick, would you have actually told her to her face?
Heck no. Heck no. And it wasn't a bad pick. So we don't even have to go there.
Kendall, you're awesome. I appreciate it. I need the confidence bump because he was just sitting there and I like, I
you
think
got
I
it.
Got it.
It
I got to
pick.
Do it.
No,
all
it was
right,
a good
Kendall.
Pick. It was a good pick.
Thank you so much for this. We appreciate it. And we look forward to checking in with you each week moving forward here.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. See you later.
Thank you.
And to follow up on some of those notes, by the way, she thinks Njoku is going to have a good day. 50.5, the receiving yards set, 4.5 receptions. Drake May against the Raiders, as she referenced, 214.5 pass yards, his number. The 1.5 touchdowns, juice -143 to the over. And then Jalen Waddle, 57.5, his receiving yards prop, 4.5 on the receptions. Okay, we're going to step aside. When we come back, it is time for Why Not Wednesday, looking at some plus money props or unique situations that could make you want to say,
say, why not? And JVT might actually remember how to play this game when we come back. We'll see. Still TBD.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football season is here, which means contest season is here as well.
Yep.
And if you need a proxy, Winner Circle Proxy Service is here to help. One trip to Vegas, get a proxy, sign up for the contest. Winner Circle Proxy can help you out. They've helped clients win over $9.3 million the last 2 years. Trusted for nearly the last decade. Check them out today. WinnerCircleProxy.com/VSIN. That's WinnerCircleProxy.com/VSIN. Usually an open for Why Not Wednesday would play there.
I was like, am I supposed to say something here? Because I will say.
Can we roll it? Can we get the Why Not Wednesday open? Let's do it.
Or, okay, how about this? Let's see. Okay, all right.
All right. Stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
Wow, we are a smooth operation today, JVT. Okay, what were you saying about the Clippers?
The real question becomes, was that moment more smooth than us trying to figure out which of the Hansons?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a rough start.
Yeah.
That was a rough start. Okay, but you have a Why Not Wednesday regarding the Kawhi Leonard situation with Pablo
Torre?
Oh, no,
I was just going to
fill. Where are you going to hit us
with? No, I was just going to fill time with the fact that everybody is now bringing up the fact that, you know, Jalen Brunson took a deal well below market last year. Maybe the Clippers aren't the only
Maybe he's got the secret business as well that's paying him $7 million a year
for
doing no work.
Every time he walks into a bodega, he just gets $1,000 and just walks out.
Maybe we can – I know you haven't, like, listened to that in full and you wanted to do that before you give a full opinion. So maybe we can touch on that a little bit more tomorrow. But I do have some bets that I think are worth discussing here on this Why Not Wednesday.
I totally do, too.
Some plus money options here. And I'm going to start with the Border War being back for the first time since – Mizzou joined the SEC in 2012, and we're going to get to best bets at the end of the hour today. Kansas plus 6.5 is probably going to make my card. Two programs and fan bases that really don't like each other, but I want to know if you think, can you say why not to Kansas getting the money line upset here? You're getting plus 200. We've talked a lot about how maybe this Kansas State team could have been a little underrated, and with Jalen Daniels so fresh and healthy, lighten it up early. Could he have a strong performance on the road?
All right, before I answer this, I'm going to read a tweet from Brian M. that says, he says, JVT to mess up the game, Why Not Wednesday, minus 340. To that I say, and to you, why not, Stormy? Kansas could totally pull this off. Right? I did that, right?
Wow,
2-1.
It.
Kansas, get it done.
Hold on real quickly, before we move on. You didn't read the second half of this tweet. Him to get frustrated at any point, minus 1,000. That's honestly where I thought we were going to go just now.
No, I don't think I get frustrated, honestly, a lot here.
Never
at least
frustrated.
At least with you. I do get frustrated with many topics that we discuss, but never with you. No, I say why not. Look, you and I have discussed this. I'm going through, you and I were talking about this before the show, kind of going through these last few days, rewatching games I didn't really get a full eye on. And one of those was going to be getting an eye on Missouri and just kind of deep diving into what they've done up to this point. But I am somebody who has watched Kansas the last 2 weeks. And again, Fresno State, Weber, and like really not really doing that much. But I do think there's something more there with Jalen Daniels being healthy, as you mentioned, being in full control of an offense that he's been in now for a Cam Rising-esque millionth year. You know what I mean? Like he knows this thing like the back of his hand. And even if you're breaking in new receivers, as was kind of the case heading into the Fresno State game, I still think that there is an explosiveness and a certain lethalness to this offense with Leopold and Daniels when they're together that makes them more dangerous. I don't know how good they're going to be defensively, but I do know that Fresno State went from averaging about 2 yards per carry in the opener to well over 7 against Georgia Southern and looked like a completely different offense. I think there's something to Kansas being a little bit better than what we expected heading into the year. And if Daniels is going to be healthy, which he is heading into this week, why not being able to pull this upset off against Mizzou?
And to your point, I know it's been Fresno State and Wagner who they've played to this point, but still 80% completions for Jalen Daniels, along with the explosiveness that he has, I think is very notable here. And with this being their third game versus Mizzou's second, maybe a little bit farther along too, and maybe the defense has worked out some of those early kinks. How do we?
Did I say Weaver, by the way? Thank you.
It's okay. How do we say? Where do we put the emphasis on Pribula?
Pribula?
So I've heard Pribula.
Pribula? I don't know, and I pride myself in names. I really don't know.
I think it's a Pat Connaughton situation where I've heard Connaughton and Connaughton, and I have no idea how to really say it. So
it's Connaughton, isn't it?
I feel like that's what I've heard on broadcast. I've already figured out Jiren Kiawe Sangapuletele, so that's all I need.
Also, shout out our guy, Tim Murray, was listening to the College Football Betting Podcast yesterday. I know that you got that name down so well from hearing me say it all week after I heard Tim say it. Love you, Tim. Let's go back and forth. Let's figure out the pronunciation.
Oh, did he butcher it?
Oh, man.
Yeah?
Brutal.
What'd he say?
Saga, pulley, TT. It was like a whole thing.
Now I just need to hear Matt Heumann say it and I'll be complete.
How about this one? Can you say why not? And I already have a feeling you're going to say no, but to Alabama making the playoff, this was like -2 whatever going into the season. Yes, week one looked awful against Florida State. But if you, like, let's say Florida State goes on and is awesome this year, and Alabama had a reality check in the trenches when it comes to their effort and effort alone, and they get this thing back on track, is plus 190 a worthwhile? I don't know if I believe it, but considering the price it was and your preseason beliefs on them, could you get talked into it?
My question would be back to you. Do you just actually trust that they're not going to do this again?
I don't.
Not lose a game that they should not.
I put this in as a talking point because I just don't know if I believe it. Because they're so talented, but if they're not even going to try.
So there's part of it where I don't think this was officially reported or not, but there was some speculation as to Kalen DeBoer maybe not asking them to tackle as much in the fall. And so maybe there was some lack of physicality that they were not ready for in a game like that against Florida State. I thought it was brought up as a very strong point for some, especially in the Florida State camp. Danny Cannell, I think, brought this up, as did Bud Elliott, who works over there at CBS, which was the charged environment that maybe was not accounted for many going in there after the year that Florida State had, given what we know about the program. Going out there, it was almost like a buzzsaw we did not expect.
And lots of unknowns for a team that had a lot more transition once again with all the transfers.
As we noted, Castellanos, I think, is a better fit for that offense as opposed to Bill O'Brien, somewhat pro-esque style. So there's just a lot of things we didn't really know that maybe now we know about Florida State, who could be one of the better teams in the ACC. But you look at Alabama's schedule and what we know about DeBoer so far in this role, do you trust that? Because what would you think is your margin of error? One loss? Two? Can a three-loss Alabama get into the playoff? I would say probably not.
I don't think so.
So can they go with just one loss for your margin of error? Georgia on the road, Tennessee at home, at South Carolina, home against LSU, home against Oklahoma, and at Auburn. Can you go through those six games? And that doesn't even account for the other contests you have to play, like Vandy, who they lost to last year, Missouri. Can you really go through that stretch with just one loss if you're Alabama?
It's, to me, if they're the team I thought they were prior to watching them week one, they could. Mm-hmm. But are they that? I don't know. And that's why, to me, I couldn't pull the trigger on that number.
I would want more.
Yes, I would agree with that. Okay, we talked and Call Me Crazy Butt earlier this week about LSU, and you mentioned Call Me Crazy Butt. Could LSU be the best team in the SEC? Plus 270 for them to make the SEC title game? That seems like a pretty nice number, no?
Oh, the SEC title game, yeah. I mean, I would not disagree with that. I think, especially if
I'm so proud of you.
We believe in the defensive improvements that seem to be very apparent against Clemson. Because if you look around at their own schedule, when you evaluate that and the ability to avoid Georgia in the regular season, you have to play Alabama, but outside of that, the rest of these big names on the schedule, we don't know what they're going to be for the most part. Road game against Ole Miss might be tough. You have to take on Florida, as we know. I will always throw out the caveat whenever you talk about a future date against Florida. Are we going to assume that DJ Lagway is playing quarterback there? It's pretty early, so one would assume that he's going to be healthy. But either way, it is a schedule that is much more manageable for LSU than the one we were just talking about with Alabama.
And they do face each other in Tuscaloosa in November as well. But yeah, I think at plus 270, I really thought that number was interesting. Okay, this is kind of a stupid one, but I'm curious your opinion on it because I didn't realize this is something I do until the other day. Can you say why not to the hand hover on the escalator railing or the stairs railing? Like, when I go down an escalator, I don't actually hold the rail. I put my hand over it, but I don't actually touch it. And I think it's because subconsciously I've seen how dirty they are.
Sure.
It's like I put my hand over it for safety so that I don't fall.
I think I get that. I think I do touch the railing.
Do you do that?
Now that I think about it, I will. I'm more of a, when I'm going up, like one foot up on a step, okay, and then 1 foot down the lower level. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like powering through like that.
So maybe that helps you stay stable.
Yes.
And so maybe you don't even need the rail. But to me, I was just like, I didn't realize I did that until I was like, what am I doing with my hand? It's just hovering over the railing. And I'm not really a germs person, but they are pretty gross.
Mm. I'm also a very big fan of giving people space on the escalator. I don't like being too close to people on the escalator.
As you know, what I don't like is when people stand right at the top of the escalator or the bottom of the escalator where people are trying to walk on and off. What are we doing?
So I'm going to share a moment really quickly in the last 25 seconds here, where as you can kind of get a hint of Stormy, I'm getting to know her a little bit more and more. There is a tiny little bit of rage in there that I'm hoping we can get a little bit more of. Yesterday on the way out, Stormy got stuck at a light that I could have made because of somebody in front of her. The text I got filled with rage at the driver, very solid.
I said, I think I called him a tool.
You did.
I said, the tool in front of me was slow playing the left. Not my fault. We'll be right back.